Happy Tuesday, and welcome to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And this week, we're going to continue on this theme that I've been bringing up quite often over the last year about aging and changing and reinvention. And how is it that we know when it's time to shake up our lives and do something different, or to kind of stay the course and continue on the path of our lives? And so in the last couple of weeks, we talked about retirement, what that looks like, and is it about ending your life as a social creature? Is it about expanding into different opportunities? This week, I want to continue with that topic, but I have a guest with us that actually can offer a lot of insight of what this whole idea of reinvention and change and growth in our life looks like. My guest is Lynn Slater. She is a cultural influencer, model, writer, content creator, and former professor. And she started her blog, Accidental Icon, in 2014 and grew that to a loyal fan base of close to 1 million followers over multiple platforms over the course of a decade. And this decade of life experience changed Lynn's perspectives, changed her trajectory, changed her understanding of who she is and what aging looks like. And at the end of that decade, she had another life transformation that culminated in her book, her memoir, How to Be Old: Lessons in Living Boldly from the Accidental Icon. So we're going to dive into our conversation with Lynn and talk about what this idea of being old is and what her journey and experience has been. So this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you can be part of the conversation after our show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can follow us on Facebook or Instagram and leave a message there as well. You can also listen to our previous shows by visiting kcbx.org, and you can podcast wherever it is you find your podcast by searching A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe, leave a review so other people can find us, and you'll be able to listen at your convenience. So without further ado, we're going to take a quick break, catch our breath, and come back and start our conversation with Lynn Slater. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Lynn Slater. Lynn is a cultural influencer, a model, a writer, a content creator, and former professor. And she's here today to talk about her life and how she found herself at 61, creating this entirely new identity after being a mother and a grandmother and a professor of social work, and about her new memoir, How to Be Old: Lessons in Living Boldly from the Accidental Icon. So, Lynn, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to the conversation.
Oh, good. Well, I have a lot of questions. So let's start with the obvious one as to how you found yourself at 61, starting or becoming the Accidental Icon. What was your journey to that?
Well, I think I've had a very long career as a social worker and a professor, and I also worked a great deal in the field of child welfare and women and children's trauma. And so throughout my career, I always thought of ways to be creative as a form of self-care. Mm-hmm. And so when I was 60, I was really feeling like I needed to do that again. And what I generally had done in the past is I would go outside my field and take a course or put myself into an experience that was much more nonverbal, more expressive, like I would take improv classes, creative writing classes, documentary filmmaking, just and almost by osmosis, those new skills would kind of find their way back into my profession and sort of enlivened it. And so I kind of now have this concept of creativity as self-care. And so I turned 60 and I was having that feeling. And I just on a whim started taking classes at a school of fashion in New York City. Very random things like jewelry fabrication, sewing. And I landed in this one class called Building a Vintage Business. And of course, in these classes, I was usually the oldest one in the room. But what had begun to happen is that students and professors would say to me, "You have a really interesting style. You should start a blog." And I was very interested in starting this blog as a way to really study fashion and clothing and the power and influence and sort of the way that they're used in the world to both oppress identity and to support identities. And that's how I always used clothes. No matter, yeah.
I'm sorry. Was clothing something that you'd always had a personal interest in? Was that?
It was not from the perspective of fashion. I always say I have a very performative relationship with my clothes. And this started when I was a young girl because I was a voracious reader and I would find a character who I really loved and I aspired to be like. And what I would do is go into my mom's closet or go into a trunk and take out old curtains. And I would devise sort of a costume that I felt embodied those parts of the person that I wanted to emulate. And
Okay.
so that, and that's what sometimes is very, people get confused. They think I'm interested in fashion, but I've really been interested in the way that clothing can really challenge identity, can help us experiment with different identities and to convey who we are in a way that might be different than society says who we are.
Interesting.
And in fact, that is what ended up happening with Accidental Icon.
So,
So basically, they said you should start a fashion blog. And I was like, all right, you know what? I know how to write. I can make a website. My partner's a photographer. I like to do research. So I'm going to do it. And I did. And I never in a million years intended or anticipated what actually ended up happening to me.
When you, I'm really fascinated with the very first things you talked about, that we could do a whole nother conversation about this idea of self-care and the helping professions, because the way you approach that by throughout your entire career, stepping into taking classes and expanding your interests outside of the helping world is brilliant in itself, because we talk a lot about getting massages or going for walks or taking a yoga class. But what you're talking about is really deep diving into a whole nother way of seeing yourself outside of that identity as a professor or as a social worker. And I just want to say that that's a whole nother direction of interest that I think would be worth looking at, because you found not only new ways to reinvent yourself, but were able to stay with a really challenging career for a long time.
Yes.
Then you find yourself in night school, and then you start a blog. What was the intention with the blog? Were you hoping that just your friends would read it, or,
It
what?
was basically just a structure for me to indulge my love of research, to investigate this whole other world, and to write. And basically, I had this very formulaic thing in the early years where I would enter into an essay about some bigger issue through an article of clothing or a designer that I admired. And then I would literally do what I did when I was a little girl, and I would dress myself in a way that conveyed it. And then on Fridays, I did something called Friday Fashion Bibliography, riffing off my professor. But I would post interesting articles that I found not in mainstream fashion magazines, but independent fashion magazines, magazines that were challenging cultural norms and presenting new ideas. And so, excuse me, that was pretty much how I did it. And in the process, I started to meet all of these people who were involved in fashion, but not big brands or people who were in the mainstream, but really like fashion design students and emerging designers. And I did a lot of work with independent magazines.
Wow.
I did music videos. I'm in a music video of Charlotte Gainsbourg's, and I play her older self in it. And so for me, it was, again, this idea of self-care, where I was having these new experiences. I was meeting a lot of people who had different ways of seeing the world. And my area of scholarship also was interdisciplinary practice and education. So I've always had that kind of a mind, and resisted the siloing that higher education wants to do now, and was doing at the time I started. So it was just a pleasure project, really. And then it must have been the right cultural moment. And I think for me, I give credit to the early bloggers in fashion who really kind of crashed the gate and said, we deserve to have a voice in fashion. The editors of Vogue are no longer going to be the big gatekeepers. Street style was starting to happen. And so I entered into the scene at that time. And it was a time where literally no older women had been represented in high fashion. And in 2015 and 2016, Joan Didion appeared in a Celine ad, and I appeared in a Valentino eyewear ad. And so suddenly, you know, for a lot of young women, and in the early years of my doing this project, 95% of my followers were under the age of 40.
Wow.
And it was almost like all of a sudden they were saying, wow, we could see that you could still be kind of cool. You could be relevant when you are old. And so for me, that moment was the real moment that there was a change. And I feel like, and we'll probably get to this, but I feel like over the 10 years I did it, there was enormous regression.
Interesting. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Lynn Slater, a cultural influencer, model, author, and content creator, and also has her PhD, which we kind of glossed over, a woman of substance by any means. And we're talking about her life and her memoir that just was released, How to Be Old, Lessons in Living Boldly from the Accidental Icon. It's interesting because I teach family psychology, and one of the sections that I talk about is aging, old age, death and dying. And I start that segment showing pictures of all elderly people. And I say, what if from the time you were young, you were shown these pictures and were told that these are the most beautiful people you'll ever see, and that you can only hope to be that beautiful sometime in your life. And if we showed these pictures throughout a child's lifetime and your lifetime, how differently would you feel about beauty and aging and looks? And it's a really powerful part of my class every quarter that gets a lot of conversation with primarily young women in this class, because there's something freeing, they say, about thinking about that being a beautiful time of life, or the most beautiful time of life. And I imagine that that's what you were finding when you started off with your blog, and all these young women were finding their way to you.
Yes. And I think one of the problems that happened after that, because I think that the photographs of Joan Didion and myself, we both had white hair, we both had wrinkles. It was sort of, we were real women, not celebrities. Well, she was sort of a celebrity, but she was a serious writer of essays. And I was a professor. And so we were showing these sort of older women with substance. Unfortunately, what has changed now, and I am both the perpetrator and the victim of this, is that one of the reasons I left and I stopped doing influencing was because I had been challenged by some older women that I was really showing a very idealized version of age.
Okay.
And I think now I'm very, very much invested in how do we realistically represent older age. And right now, unfortunately, just like everything else seems to be polarized, we have two polarized images, right? We have one of decline and dementia and chronic illness and being a burden on our families and society. And on the other, we have these people who look quite young. They seem ageless, in fact. They are doing things like running marathons when they're 90. So you have these two extremes of people who are shown to be horribly dependent and needy. And then you have these people who need nothing. And the truth is, the vast majority of us, and I am now on a fixed income because I am not doing that work anymore, who really comprise the truth of aging, which is somewhere in between, right? There's many wonderful things about it, but your body does change and things begin to happen. And for me, if we are indicating that we don't need anything and we can take care of ourselves, then policymakers and innovators are going to say, oh, well, they don't need anything. And so to me, this polarization of representation is very concerning to me and very dangerous. And I use the example, and you know, I think a lot of people are into sort of the glamorous older ager. And I think a perfect example is how people went absolutely crazy over the Golden Bachelor.
I was going to ask you how you felt about that.
Okay. I watched the first episode, and after that, I was like, I'm not wasting time. So what did it for me was in the first episode, they had a woman come out of the limousine. She's got gray curly hair, a house dress, and a walker. And she's like hobbling towards the bachelor. And he very disingenuously says, do you need some help? And at that moment, she tosses the wig away, throws the walker away, takes off the house dress. She's got a strapless dress, a body that probably is worked on 5 hours a day. And she basically says, do I look like I need anything? And so for me, that really nailed it. Like, this is not going to be something that is going to be groundbreaking and changing the representation of age, right? And it's still a whole lot of women who are spending hours laboring on their appearance and hoping for a man. And that is not the women who I am in contact with. A lot of women our age are really doing amazing things, which I call deferred dreams.
I love that. So I guess I want to backtrack a little bit about that path, because the book kind of goes through each year of your 60th decade on the planet. Yeah. And all the wonderful adventures. And I really love how you tied it to fashion and the stories. And for anyone who loves clothes and just loves the whole idea of connecting identity and dressing. And so as you're growing this business and these experiences all through your 60s and the traveling that you got to do, what happened to you as a person, you know, going from being a professor, a social worker, a mother, a grandmother, kind of that not common, but the traditional path. What happened to you psychologically throughout that decade? And then what got, to, where did you get to the point where that needed to change? Because working in the helping professions, I would imagine this really had a lot of mental health implications.
Yes. I think what happened to me, and you can kind of see it over the decades, is that as I started to work more on Instagram and moved away from the creative project that I had originally done, I was becoming more and more unhappy.
Did you have to move to, in, with, how did you make that choice to go from the blogging to joining Instagram? Did you have a team or is it just you?
Yes. No, okay. No. I mean, once you get represented, right, it's a whole different story.
Okay.
And the amount of money that people can make doing this is actually obscene. And I can give you a comparison, is that I had a international modeling campaign that I got, and I probably did about 8 hours of work. And for that 8 hours, I made 75% of my salary as a full-time professor. And so for me, I think what happened, and I'm being very honest about it, and the process of writing a memoir is so helpful because you have that time and the space to go back and really reflect. And I think, you know, I had been a social worker my entire life. For most of my life, I was not compensated well, particularly in my early social work career, where social work was not necessarily being a therapist, right? That has changed with, as you said, medical model stuff. And so none of my jobs had pensions or retirement accounts. And so I really didn't start saving until much, much later in life. I think I was in my 50s. And so this money that was sort of put before me became very seductive and tempting because of sort of this devaluing, right, of helping work, caring work, and then this sort of new arena of social media and fashion and things like that. And even though I had about 3 years where I made more money than I ever made in my entire career. But despite that, I was so unhappy.
So talk about that then. Was that connected to the Instagram exposure or the
Yes.
expectations? What drew
Yes.
unhappiness?
You have to be on social media all the time because you have to be engaging. You have to get your numbers up because the higher the number, the better the jobs. And then on Instagram, you're working more with brands. So I started to work with other brands other than fashion. And what happens is they send you a brief, they show you what kind of photos they want, they tell you what to put in the caption. And so for me, again, my impulse to do anything new is this creative, right? Does this expand me as a person? Does this allow me to express an aspect of myself that I couldn't otherwise express? And so, right before the pandemic hit, I was really burnt out, really miserable, and the pandemic made everything stop. And so I did have some jobs during the pandemic, but I also had a lot of very profound experiences in terms of the pandemic itself, Black Lives Matter, that were like really bringing me back to the roots of what I had always done in my career as a social worker. And interestingly, when I wrote the memoir, I realized that in 2019, at the end of that year, I made a decision to retire from full-time teaching. So all of the years prior to that, I was still teaching full-time.
While you were doing the influencing and traveling for fashion shows, and you
Yes.
must have been exhausted.
And I was also doing other social work consulting work on national grants and things like that. So I realized that when I did begin to lose myself and when I started to fall down that slippery slope was after I retired from being a social work professor.
It's almost like you lost your tie to your activist nature or your,
Yes.
almost your human nature.
Yes. Because when you start becoming a digital body, right, which is what I had become, that my life was being lived more hours of the day online than it was in real life. And my teaching always pulled me back into real life. And so I think that is when I really became very disconnected with myself and who I was. And during the pandemic, all of a sudden, I was confronted with who are you? Who do you want to be? And I started to write. I started to return to my blog. I had kind of not written on my blog, it was all about Instagram. I started writing essays on my blog. I started mini blogging on my Instagram, and a lot of people resonated with that. A lot of women were resonating with it. And also, I was impacted because I couldn't see my mother, I couldn't see my daughter, I couldn't see my grandchild. And so Calvin and I basically had a conversation, and we were like, we need to move closer to family because we can never be in this position again. And we need to sort of reinvent and really be in nature, be in the world again, be in life, be in family, be in relationship. And so we did. We moved to a suburb about an hour north of New York City, 10 minutes away from my grandchildren. And that's when I very slowly began to stop doing sponsored posts and really just decided I can't, from a value perspective, continue to do that anymore.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Lynn Slater, a cultural influencer, model, writer, content creator, and former professor, and also the author of her new memoir, How to Be Old: Lessons in Living Boldly from the Accidental Icon. And we're here today talking about Lynn's journey through the decade of her 60s, from professor, grandmother, to writer, icon, and almost the full circle back to finding yourself. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come back to continue our conversation.
I was a little girl alone in my little world who dreamed of a little home for me. I played pretend between the trees and fed my house guests bark and leaves and laughed in my pretty bed of green. I had a dream that I could fly from the highest swing. I had a dream.
You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we are here with my guest, Lynn Slater. I keep wanting to say Dr. Lynn Slater.
Please do. I like that.
I think you should, because you have a PhD. You're a woman of substance. And because our conversation is kind of showing how your life veered away from being a cultural Instagram influencer, that I feel like that Dr. Lynn Slater has a lot to do with kind of regrounding yourself from the story you've been talking about, kind of rediscovering that foundation of the things you believe in. So I'm going to use Dr. Slater.
Well, thank you, because it's a lot of hard work to get a PhD.
Absolutely. And when did you earn your PhD?
I actually finished my PhD when I was 53 years old.
And I think that's another important part of your story.
Yes, that was another creative impulse.
Something to kind of grow into or explore. And as you mentioned earlier in the show, that throughout your career, you had found ways for self-care that were outside of kind of the norm of self-care, which people talk about getting massages or, going for a retreat weekend, that you would take classes to grow your knowledge about subjects that you were curious about. And that's how the Accidental Icon came to be, because you were taking a vintage fashion class on vintage upscaling of clothing, which you loved, and it kind of accidentally found your way here. And so, as we continue on your story of kind of awakening, I just keep trying to imagine what it would be like to go from being a professor to being a model on photo shoots, and how all of a sudden, every place you go, you're having your photo taken, and people are glorifying how beautiful you are and how wonderful you look on your clothes. I would find that really hard to not enjoy or to feel attracted to that kind of attention, no matter what that age was.
Well, to be honest with you, it was not about the attention. It was not the attention I liked. And
Okay.
so if I have to be very clear about the parts I really loved, it really was meeting a lot of new people, having really interesting conversations, having new experiences, things I didn't experience before. For me, the top thing I take away from it was the opportunity to travel and to be able to travel to places that I probably would not have afforded to travel. And so that for me was the high point.
Interesting.
The attention was at times, challenging because you get to a point where you are well known no matter where you go. And that happened to me because I had a very international following. And so I would travel to, London, and people would come up to me and say, "Oh, hi, I follow you." Or in New York City, I had to think about what am I looking like when I walk out the door, because I was probably going to bump into, 10 people that are going to stop and say they follow me. And, you know, I was always very gracious and kind because I understood that without all these people, I wouldn't have this, right? But that's what people don't realize is that I really hated having my photo taken. I'm actually rather introverted. I'm an introvert who can be an extrovert in very structured situations, like a classroom, right? The classroom's like my stage. I am on fire. But that is why I wore sunglasses. And so if you look, it's only been recently since I've moved here to Peekskill and stopped being an influencer. And I really wish that when people introduce me, and I know my PR people send out the thing, but it's like I'm a reformed influencer,
Yeah, I think that
right?
makes
And
sense.
I'm a writer.
Yes.
That's primarily what I do. And so my job has been trying to really highlight the second part of my story,
Yes.
right? Because the first one is all glamorous and fabulous, and you know, look at this person, look what you could do at any age. This is a more realistic portrayal. You know, before this podcast, I had to go to physical therapy today. So I feel like that is my job now as a writer, and even in what I post on Instagram, is I want people to know what it's really like to be older. And it's glorious, but sometimes not so. But our challenge is how do we use creativity to meet the challenge? Right? And how do we get innovators to think about creative ways to keep us doing the things we love, the things that bring meaning to our life? And that can be making sure I can walk to my local coffee shop. It doesn't have to be traveling to Shanghai to talk at Shanghai Fashion Week, right? So I feel like that's really where I landed at the end of the book. And that's the story that I really want to tell right now.
I appreciate that because I would imagine in hearing you talk that your life became really narrow, even though you were traveling and seeing the world and it all looked at that you for Dr. Slater, Lynn, it felt probably pretty constrictive.
Yes. Well, and one way that I managed it was, and you know, probably a psychiatrist would call me an as if personality, but I really saw her as me, but not me, if you know what I mean. She was almost like an alter ego, like it really was a role. I was acting, and I was always. Still very much, I mean, I was still cleaning my own toilet and, you know, doing these everything. And again, that's what I loved about the beginning of Accidental Icon. The years from 2014 to 2017, because what I was getting a lot of traction was I was just an ordinary woman. And here I was, you know, I'm not conventionally beautiful. I had gray hair. I had wrinkles. I was wearing consignment shop clothes. And I was sort of still conveying, wow, you can be an ordinary woman with a really interesting life. And then when it turned over into that sort of celebrity realm, it then becomes less accessible. And so for me, that is when I guess I stopped being that ordinary woman, and became this more idealized woman in the world. And I think there has been a shift with some younger women who are now writing really seriously about motherhood and bodies and even age and things like that. And I think they're really curious about what is aging really like, not this thing we're seeing in the media with all the celebrities. And it's interesting, I had interviews this week with two young women, and they were asking me really deep questions, which I think young women have, but they're afraid to ask. Like, one of them read my book from cover to cover, and I could tell she really read it. And she said to me, "Are you ever afraid of dying?" And so those are the questions I want to be asked, not, "Oh, how did it feel to be the accidental icon?" You know? And I told her honestly how it felt. I told her how I felt when my mother died, and my thought was, whoa, my generation's next up at bat. And the plus side, though, of taking your death seriously is that it makes every moment you have now very precious. And it gives you the energy and motivation to live life fully. But it was so fascinating to me that they had these sorts of questions. They want to know what it's really like. I think they know they're being conned in some way.
Absolutely.
So I think we have a responsibility to the younger women, as well as ourselves, to really convey the truth of what it means to be old.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Dr. Lynn Slater, author, writer. Her new memoir is How to Be Old: Lessons in Living Boldly from the Accidental Icon. I want to talk about what it is to grow old and what death and dying looks like. And my mentor, who was 90, passed away last year, and she wrote a book, Befriending Death. And that was her whole goal, was to be awake and present when she died. And I think to have those conversations makes the living part a lot easier.
Absolutely. And I have always reinvented myself through creativity. And I joke with my family, I'm going to reinvent death. And I'm going to do it my way. And I'm already talking to them about things like green burials and sort of not doing it the traditional way. And actually, that's very interesting to me. Like, how am I going to creatively, dispose of myself when I die, right? How do I want that to be? And I think shortly after I moved here, and fortunately, I was much closer to my mother, I experienced her decline and her death with her. And I write about it in the book. And I write about her body as a beautiful, beautiful thing. And how, at the end of her life, my mother adamantly refused to wear clothes. And that was how she wanted to be at the end of her life. And, at first, we were very much with the staff, saying, okay, let's figure out how to get her dressed. But then my mother was so adamant about it, our advocacy became, how can she remain naked in a dignified way? And so I write about walking into her room and seeing how a sheet is draped, and she always had beautiful shoulders, and it looked like a strapless gown, and really kind of having that experience with her for many months. And then I was quite privileged to be with her the moment that she died. It really transformed my whole way of thinking about death. It really did. And like, I had the physical experience of my hand being on her body and literally feeling her essence come away from that body. And for me, that's a comfort because now she is in this air around me. And I find that a more comforting sort of thought than all the things I was taught in my younger years being raised a very strict Catholic.
Me too. And so, in our last minutes together, let's talk about how you bring this wisdom and your experiences forward. If it's not as an influencer, which seems to be the only way to access many people, how do you find your way through that or to that place of being heard? I don't know how to say it on platforms. What is the goal? What is the plan
Well,
here, Dr. Slater?
basically, I have not done a sponsored post on Instagram in over 2 years.
Okay.
So the posting I do now is much more, one of the paradoxes for me is that when you write a book, you have to promote it. So it's like, here I am promoting a product, and this is the whole wh reason I left. So I've had to do some of that. But a lot of my social media, my Instagram, I write about something, and I'll ask a question. And I have so many people who just really take the question seriously and respond in the comments. It's not just a heart. It's like a real genuine comment. And because I have this core of people who have stayed with me through the transitions, that is one way that I continue to, as long as I'm getting comments that say, "Oh, you're saying what I didn't have the words to say. You're making me feel better about myself today." As long as I keep getting comments like that, it is worthwhile, right, for me to do that. I'm using writing a lot as a way to do that. I have a Substack that I absolutely love, and I write essays about it, about my experience, about older age, about fashion, about clothing, because I'm still interested. I'm not interested in wearing it and having photos taken of me wearing it, but I'm still interested in it as a creative sort of thing. And the other thing I'm doing, which I am so excited about, is that, my partner Calvin is a photographer and he took all my pictures. He was a nighttime photographer, daytime scientist. And I am writing a monthly column for our local newspaper. And it is called How to Be Old, where we live. And Calvin is volunteering his services to take some photographs that the editor needs to take. And the editor is like an amazing woman. She has, the paper, local paper was closed down, the print edition. She just did so much and now has made an online version of it. They won an award last year. So that is how I am being creative in my community now and really enjoying myself as a grandmother, as a community member. We have this amazing coffee house where all people of all generations hang out. And I have started a conversation with a bunch of women about reinvention. And every time we meet in the coffee house and we mention that word, more women join the conversation.
Absolutely.
So I think it might not be in the most public of ways, which actually suits me. And that's what I liked about Substack is a lot of people bring their followers over to it from like Instagram, but I didn't because I only want people who are really engaged and want to be in a conversation in my life at this moment, right?
Is Substack, I'm sorry to be ignorant, is that a magazine or what platform is that?
Well, it's a platform for writers and it's a subscription-based platform. And it came into being when there was a lot of firing of journalist and closing down media things and just freelancing being impossible way to make a living. And so basically you have a choice. You can offer a paid subscription and you can get paid for your writing. And then you can offer a free subscription. And then people just sign up on the app and they start scrolling and seeing what's interesting. A lot of really well-known writers write on it. And so I have a really nice following on it now. It's still free because with the book and all that it takes around that, I haven't had the time to think about what would I offer if I made it a paid subscription? What would be value added? So at some point I might think about it, but right now it's sort of taking the place of my blog. It's where I do the kind of writing I did on my blog. Actually, my last blog post, I took a very old blog post that I wrote in 2014 and looked at its meaning for me today. And that became how to end a chapter. So it's about recycling. I mean, reinvention is about recycling, and it's taking all of those things that you've ever done in your life, the big things, the not so big things, and really stopping and saying, how can I use this in the service of a new experience, a deeper, a way to express my fashion or my passion or whatever it is that is your interest. And it really, then you begin to see aging as additive and not subtractive, right? Because you're all the ages you ever were. And
Right.
everything you learned and everything you experienced and all the skills you had that you spent time developing are all with you. And you have an arsenal that could be exploited for whatever it is that you want to do.
So, Dr. Slater, what is it you want to model for your daughter and grandchildren?
I want to, A, number one, I do not want them to be afraid of getting older.
Okay.
I want them to know the realities of it so that they can plan for it. And I was actually having this conversation with my daughter because if I have always wanted to be a writer, for me, publishing this book exceeds Accidental Icon by a trillion.
Wow.
And I almost wish people were saying, oh, it's never too late to be a writer. I'm publishing my first non-academic book at the age of 70. Like, how cool is that? And so when I was younger, in my 30s, and I was raising a family and having a demanding job and trying to figure out how am I going to get childcare today because my child's sick and I have a meeting I can't miss and all of that stress. I wish I had had a fantasy or a vision or a mood board of who I would be when I was 70. Because in the midst of all of that, when you're putting like, who had time to write? I was putting my dream on a shelf. And if I had known, right, that was just a deferred dream, but it could be a dream realized, that it could have been a comfort to me being old when I was young. And so I want that for my daughter. I want her to think, okay, I'm working hard now. I have to put myself aside for this reason or that reason or whatever. But this thing I really want to do, I'm going to be able to do it. And I saw my mother do that. And I really, really want, I, you know, when we're young, right, we're always daydreaming. Oh, you know, what kind of career am I gonna have? Am I gonna have children? What kind of a way for marriage or relationship, whatever, you know, who's gonna be my partner? We never daydream about, oh, how am I gonna be when I'm an older woman? And I wanna tell everybody who's like starting at the age of 35, start making a mood board of who you wanna be when you're 65 or 70, and then start thinking about how you're gonna make that happen. And I think, you know, again, I follow a lot of young women feminist writers now who are writing about motherhood. And one of them did write something about the Golden Bachelor. And at the end of it, she said, where are the crones? Where are the old women with experience who can tell us how to do this? Where are they? I do not want to labor for hours on my appearance. I don't want to have to worry about that when I am old. Like, I hate it now. I'm trying to get out of it. And so I think we really do have a responsibility, those of us who have a voice, like you do and I do, to really speak not only to women our age, but to younger women about all of it, the good, the bad, the ugly, but all of it. Because they are writing about the good, the bad, the ugly right now. They are writing all of it. And so I think that's what we should do.
Dr. Lynn Slater, thank you so much for spending this hour with me. Dr. Slater's book, her new memoir, How to Be Old: Lessons in Living Boldly from the Accidental Icon, will be available. And also, you can find Lynn on Substack if you'd like to read more of her writing. Thank you so much for being a part of this conversation. This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can find me on Instagram, on Facebook. Leave me a message, or you can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org and podcast our show and share it with your friends. As always, thank you for tuning in and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I don't wanna be her. I just wanna be little old me. I shouldn't have to think. Who am I supposed to be today? And what gave you the right to tell me who I should be? Who gave you that right? 'Cause I feel lovely just the way that I am. Yes, I feel lovely the way that I am. I know you want the best. Yeah, only good things for me. But you have to realize I can't be all these things you project on me. 'Cause I'm beautiful to me. Doesn't that mean a thing? To be enough for you, need that to be enough for you, 'cause it's enough for me, it's enough for me. Am I supposed to give up everything I am just to make you happy? I thought I was the one you always wanted me to is fine by me. 'Cause I am lovely just the way that I am. Oh yeah. Yes, I am lovely the way that I am. Oh, 'cause I feel love.